From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The White House is reportedly preparing a plan to address homelessness around the country, particularly in cities like Los Angeles, California. And the plan could ominously include a greater role for policing and also the repurposing of large unused federal facilities to house people living on the streets. But a new report by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty highlights the growing problem of unhoused people across the country and suggests that housing, not handcuffs, is the obvious solution. Maria Foscarini is my guest. She's the founder and executive director of the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. Welcome to the program, Maria.
Thank you, Sonali. Good to be with you.
So before we talk about the report, and I should mention this is an update on your 2016 report, before we get to that, let's talk about what you think the White House has planned. Do you have any sense of why President Donald Trump has taken such a great interest in the issue of homelessness? It's certainly good to have a president worried about this growing issue. He sent federal officials to secretly tour cities like LA. But some worry that this is a sort of political football between him and liberal states.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. Of course, we want the president to be concerned about homelessness. This is a national crisis. It's appropriate and, in fact, necessary for the president to worry about it and take action to address it. But in this case, we are fearful that the president, whose interest, by the way, came out of the blue, it didn't seem to be preceded by anything that had come before, but it was a sudden interest that arose during his trip to California. And it does seem, and we fear that it may be politically motivated, that it's a way. It arose in the context of him criticizing Democratic states and governors and cities, Democratic mayors of California cities. So it appears as if it may be politically motivated. And I suppose what's even more important is what we know so far about potential plans and actions that the administration may take.
So among the actions that we think they may take is, as I mentioned, an increased role in policing. Now, of course, the police have in cities around the country often been deployed to areas where unhoused people are living. And as your report suggests, it is precisely the opposite solution. Housing, not handcuffs, is the title of your report. But, you know, before even the Trump administration gets involved, how would you describe the role that police do play in, say, cities like Los Angeles?
Yes. So criminalization and the use of police to address homelessness and the use of law enforcement more broadly to address homelessness is a trend. It's a trend that's been going on for years, and we document it in the report released Tuesday, Human Rights Day, December 10th. We just released this report. We document increases in laws that make it a crime to live in public places, laws that make it a crime to sleep in public, to eat in public, to ask for donations, to beg in public. All these laws take many different forms, and these have been on the increase for years now. So this is not a result of the Trump administration. It's not even a partisan issue. Certainly, there's been a bipartisan interest in criminalizing homelessness. But what we have seen in the past few years is that we have been making progress in convincing cities that this is not a good approach. It will not work. You can criminalize people, but people still need a place to live. At the end of the day, even if you force people out of a particular part of a city, they have to be somewhere, and they will be somewhere. They'll be worse off with an arrest record. So this is not a good approach. It's also an expensive approach. It costs money to deploy police and to deploy the entire criminal justice system. Housing people not only is more effective, more humane, it is also less expensive. So we have been making progress in making this case to cities, and also had gotten some support from the federal government before this administration came into office. So we felt that we were on a good path. We certainly had not solved the problem. The problem continues to increase. But now we have the president indicating his interest in doubling down on this approach of criminalization, and that's what is really concerning us.
Now, at the same time, you also have the U.S. Supreme Court that is considering a case around the criminalization of homelessness in cities where there simply aren't enough shelter beds to house them, which is a really interesting situation because our increasing poverty, increasingly crisis situation where housing is concerned, housing is getting more expensive, but people aren't, people's wages aren't keeping up with them. Good paying jobs are hard to come by. So if people are forced to live on the streets and there's not enough shelter beds to house them, how do cities justify arresting them? So the Supreme Court is considering these this particular case around this. And also at the same time that all of this was happening, there was a change of leadership in the government agency that is responsible to address the issue of homelessness, in particular, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness has a new head, Robert Marbut, and the Obama-era head, Matthew Doherty, was essentially forced to resign. Now, Robert Marbut is a little bit controversial in that he has considered, at least in theory, this idea to simply move people off the streets into these large facilities before, you know, next steps. And I understand that the White House is considering an FAA facility in California. They're looking at federal properties to basically move homeless people into. What do you make of this?
So you said a lot of different things. So first of all, using federal properties, current law requires federal agencies to make unused properties available as housing and service sites for nonprofits who are helping homeless people. This is already required by federal law. It's a law that we have been to court multiple times to enforce. It's hard to get these federal agencies to give up their properties. There are examples where the properties have been used to good purpose. So I find it extremely ironic that now the federal government is looking at this. And it not only ironic, but also worrisome, because instead of saying, well, here's this existing program, let's enforce it, let's make it work, they are saying, well, let's identify this remote location and kind of forcibly put people there. No, that's not how this is supposed to work.
Do you know for sure if it's some sort of forcible rehousing?
No, I don't know it for sure, but that's what we are worried about. Because when you talk about sweeps and criminalizing homelessness and getting people off the street, which is what the language has been, that's different than saying, let's create housing opportunities for people. Right. Yeah, I mean, if they are serious and if they would like to use vacant properties, federal or otherwise, to create housing opportunities for people, people will go to housing if it's available. I never met a single person who will refuse housing if it's actually available. Right now, there's a housing crisis in this country. There's not sufficient affordable housing. There's not even a sufficient emergency shelter, as you said, for people in need of it. So that's why people are on the street, not because they would like to be there, as the administration has suggested, but because they must be there. Now, the Supreme Court, you mentioned, so this is a case that we actually brought, the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, with our partners, and we have been litigating, and there was an important ruling from the Federal Appeals Court in the Ninth Circuit that said that if people have no indoor place to be, making it a crime for them to live outside is unconstitutional. It's cruel and unusual punishment under the United States Constitution. So this was a very strong ruling in our favor. It's based on existing precedent. In other words, this is not something new. It's a basic principle in our law and in our Constitution that you can't punish somebody, criminally punish somebody for their status. This is what these laws essentially do. Now, the other side, the city we were litigating against, Boise, Idaho, has asked the Supreme Court to review the lower court's decision. We have opposed that, and the court has not yet said whether it will take the case or not. So it's not actually at the Supreme Court now. It's at the Supreme Court now to consider whether the court will take it.
So what do you make of Robert Marbot, this person who has been chosen to lead the Interagency Council on Homelessness under the Trump administration, besides the issue of his seeming to promote moving people into large facilities? Are there other issues that you are concerned about?
Well, he promotes using a criminal justice response to homelessness. Hmm. This is a major concern that he has said that he thinks that shelters are too comfortable, that offering
shelters are too comfortable?
Yes, he promotes not only moving people in. He designed a shelter in Florida where people start by living on mats outside. And if they behave appropriately according to the rules that he set out, then they might move inside into a courtyard. Then eventually they might move into an indoor space.
So something out of a Charles Dickens novel.
Exactly. It's a punitive approach. And he has specifically said he doesn't believe in Housing First is a model that there's a lot of consensus and a lot of evidence supporting its effectiveness. And the idea is that in order to solve homelessness, you need housing, and you offer housing first. Some people need services in addition to housing. So, for example, someone might need mental health services or substance abuse services, but the bottom line is you need housing first for anything else to be effective. And so there is a lot of support for this model. Robert Marbot has said he believes in housing fourth. So he is rejecting this evidence-based approach and in favor of using criminalization and other and punitive approaches and these large mass shelters. So it's exactly the opposite of what the evidence shows works, and that's cause for alarm.
So let's talk a little bit about your report that you did allude to earlier, Housing Not Handcuffs, 2019 Ending the Criminalization of Homelessness in U.S. Cities, just released Tuesday, December 10th, as you mentioned, is International Human Rights Day. This is an update to a report that was put out in 2016. How much worse is the problem of housing, you know, just over the last 3 years? We know, for example, in California, where I am, it's gotten dramatically worse, and this under Democratic governors.
Yes, yes. So the lack of housing is a huge problem in the country generally. And in particular parts of the country, it's getting worse even more rapidly, like California, but actually in many cities around the country. One of the most striking statistics from our report is, to me, is that laws that criminalized sleeping in vehicles rose by over 200% since we started tracking these cities in 2006. And that's And they had already risen very dramatically, 147% in 2016 over the previous 10 years. So this is indicative of the fact that people are losing their housing, moving into their cars, and more people are living in their vehicles, and thus many cities are responding by making it a crime to live in vehicles. So the housing crisis is getting worse, that's clear. And in response, unfortunately, many local communities are making it a crime for people to live outside. So housing crisis is getting worse. That means more people are forced out of their housing. There's not enough shelter. That is documented. And that means that people are forced to live outside in some way, either in their cars or literally in public places. And instead of offering housing, many cities are responding by making it a crime to sleep in public, to live in public, as if that will solve the problem. And
your report points out that there are also increasingly laws that restrict sitting and lying down in public, loitering, loafing, and vagrancy, these like terms that seem like they've come out of another century. Of course, you know, when you have people camping out to buy the latest iPhone or to, you know, get the best views for the Rose Parade, you don't see these sorts of laws being enforced.
Right, exactly. So, yes, I mean, these kinds of laws take many different forms, and cities are getting increasingly creative in what they outlaw. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's camping, which can mean just simply sleeping. It's actually sleeping. It's sitting, lying down, loafing, lots of different variations. But the bottom line is to make it illegal to occupy public space, to live in public. And at the same time, you know, enforcement is very unequal. And, you know, people camping out to buy the latest, you know, gadget are not affected by these laws. And I think part of it has to do with bias. I mean, I think it's at least in part driven by racial bias, because people who are homeless are disproportionately African-American, members of racial and ethnic minorities. And so that, I believe, is part of what is driving these kinds of responses.
And it's also really should be seen as class warfare, you know, by the rich against the poor. Among the solutions that your report suggests. The report is titled Housing Not Handcuffs. So the housing solutions, in addition to, as you were alluding earlier, reappropriating unused properties, is this issue of tiny homes or tiny houses, which, you know, for a minute seemed like kind of a cool, trendy new thing, but apparently has actually been found to have some success at a small scale in Seattle, Washington. Tell me a little bit about this.
So tiny homes are one potential solution, and tiny home villages in particular, where groups of people come together in tiny homes and form a community, that can be a solution. Now, a lot depends on the details, like how tiny are these homes? Are they feasible as a longer-term solution, or is it just an interim measure that is preferable to criminalization or preferable to a mass shelter, but not really a long-term solution?
And is the advantage of a tiny home over a shelter, is the advantage that the person who lives in a tiny home has a sort of greater sense of autonomy and personal space, and that, you know, in a way this is their home, even if it's not as big as a traditional home might be?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's the issue of autonomy. Shelters typically don't allow for much autonomy. Often, in the typical shelter, you have to enter at a certain time. You have to leave first thing in the morning. You can't leave your possessions. You have to carry them around with you. Often you have to show up every night just for a bed. You don't have a permanent spot in the shelter. So if you're working, for example, it can really not be feasible to live in a shelter. And even if you're not, it can not be feasible to have to go through this process simply every day to have a place to sleep. So having a home, even a tiny home, where you can actually leave your things, you can have a place to be during the day if you need to be, that's a huge difference. Whether it's a solution longer term is unclear. And as I said, a lot depends on the specifics. An advantage also as an interim solution is that a tiny home can be created quickly. A problem that has been noted with housing is housing we know is the permanent and long-term solution. Housing can take time to build. And if it's a question of not having enough housing supply and you have to actually create housing, that can take time. So, experimenting with quicker ways to make that happen is important, and also less expensive ways, inexpensive ways. And there are different models. There are mobile homes, there are container homes, there are different ways to do this. But there are other ways to address housing needs. There's also housing. People offering their backyards for accessory housing units. That's another example in Seattle.
Right, and California just passed a law a few years ago expanding the ability of cities to have accessory dwelling units.
Exactly, right. So there are ways to do this, and this has to happen. There has to be more housing created.
Finally, your report addresses something that we don't often see being talked about, which is preventing homelessness before it actually happens. Those people who are most vulnerable to becoming homeless on the lowest rung of the pay scale in our economy. Can you briefly end our conversation telling us how important that is, and what are some of the ways, if you had the ear of, say, Gavin Newsom or Bill de Blasio in New York, some of those big cities where homelessness is such an issue because housing is just so expensive, what advice would you give them?
Sure. So preventing housing, it comes down to preventing homelessness, making housing more affordable. Having more affordable housing, having more subsidies for housing. Right now, only 1 in 4 people who are poor enough to qualify for housing subsidies actually receives it. So funding those subsidies at scale would make a huge difference. That's a federal program. At the local level, there is a program in New York that just started and needs to be expanded, where low-income people in housing court facing eviction now can have a lawyer. And that makes a huge difference. Being represented by counsel makes a huge difference in preventing evictions. Laws that protect tenants, vulnerable tenants, from losing their housing also make a difference. Domestic violence survivors who are at risk of losing their housing if they flee abuse need to be better protected. Laws that are already in place need to be implemented.
Give out a website, Maria, where people can get the report and read it for themselves.
Absolutely, nlchp.org.
That's nlchp.org. It stands for the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. And my guest, Maria Foscarinis, is the founder and executive director of that organization. Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you, Sonali.
We've been discussing that organization's latest report, Housing Not Handcuffs. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingup@sonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.